This is Dr. Richard Verone. I'm conducting an oral history interview with Mr. Anthony LaRusso. Today is February 18th, 2005, and I am in Lubbock, Texas, on the campus of Texas Tech University in the Vietnam Archive interviewing. Mr. LaRusso is in Angola, New York. The time is approximately 1:16 p.m. Central Standard Time. Mr. LaRusso, why don't we begin with some biographical information on yourself? Can you tell me when you were born, where you were born, and a little bit about your childhood?
I was born in a hospital in Buffalo, New York, which is 20 miles from my home in Angola. Mm-hmm. And my childhood was spent here in Angola, growing up in an area that was mainly a resort, mm-hmm. right on Lake Erie, and also a farming area. My first jobs as a young fellow was working on the farm,
okay.
picking beans and strawberries and things like that. It was mainly agricultural at that time. This is back in the early 40s.
What was the size of Angola then?
Angola was a community of about 9 or 10,000 people.
Okay.
Most of the people worked at Puffin Steel, mm-hmm. which was close by. And at that time, they had like 20,000 employees.
Puffin
wow. Steel was tremendous.
Wow.
Since then, it's fallen on hard times, but most of the families worked there and made a good wage, mm-hmm. put their kids through school.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of immigrants at that time. They were mainly Italian, Polish,
mm-hmm.
and they settled in this area.
Mm-hmm. And your folks are Sicilian, is that correct?
Right, both of them.
Tell me a little bit about them. What kind of folks were they?
My dad was in World War One,
mm-hmm.
and what was interesting about that was, in order to become a citizen, he went into the service.
Okay.
When he came out, he was automatically granted citizenship.
Wow.
He never took a test or anything. That's
right.
what they did in those days.
Right.
My mom, through the years, she was a typical Italian housewife. She stayed home with the kids. There were seven of us.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a large garden behind our house, and we had strawberries and raspberries and grapes. And my father used to make wine, homemade wine, of course.
Mm-hmm.
It's an Italian tradition. He made like 2 barrels of wine a year. And anybody who came over had a glass of wine. You know, that's
yeah.
the way they were.
Uh-huh.
We didn't have a lot of money, and we had our own chickens, you know, that we, our eggs and everything came from them. So we were like a little farmers,
uh-huh.
and went to local schools.
Right.
And then I was lucky later on to go to college, which I was the first one in my family to go to college.
Wow. What did your father do exactly?
My father was a bricklayer and a stonemason.
Okay. Was it basically blue collar and working every day?
Yes.
And that kind of thing?
Yes. He started at Buffalo Steel, and then he went to business for himself.
Okay.
So he would get a job, and he'd go out and do fireplaces and mm-hmm. Patios and, you know, things like that.
Did he ever talk to you about his experiences in the war?
Yes. We used to talk. Well, the funny thing was we had neighbors that were, of course, mostly were all Sicilians, Italian, and they'd come over to the house and they would talk. And they would talk about the war and everything and who they liked, and they loved FDR and they liked Harry Truman. You know, I mean, they had their heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, FDR was the one that started Social Security, and a lot of them went on Social Security later on. That's all they had.
Right.
My father never had a pension. When he retired at 65, he lived on Social Security and a small veterans pension from World War One. That's
right.
all he had.
Right.
Because they never had that. You know, he was self-employed.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say we were like real poor, but we weren't, you know, we didn't have a lot, but yet mm-hmm. my father made money. He was the only one in the whole neighborhood that could drive a car.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, he just, my father, in order to get to work, he was self-employed, he had to have a vehicle. So we always had a vehicle, and if somebody got sick in the neighborhood, my dad would, they load him in my dad's Model A, or, you know, they'd drive him to the doctor. As a kid, I remember those things.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And the other thing I remember, after World War II, my two brothers were both in the service, and they came home, and as a kid, I was like 7, 8 years old,
mm-hmm.
and I could still remember the celebration that went on after VJ Day and VE Day.
Yeah,
I mean, as a young kid, I was just enthralled by this,
right?
By these guys coming home, and I remember my mother having the stars in the windows. In those days,
yeah.
they had these stars in your window, and that meant that like 2 sons were in the service.
Yes.
And if one got killed, then you had a gold star. You know, I mean.
Yes.
And it was such an honor to be in the service. I mean, it was just like, I mean, you got drafted or you enlisted. That was big.
Yes. Yes. Tell me about you said you have 6 siblings, you said.
Yes.
Tell me, you know, their ages. Where were you in that mix?
I was the youngest son.
Okay.
And I have a sister younger than me, so I would have been the 6th out of 7.
Okay.
And I had 2 older brothers that, like I said, were in World War II. Mm-hmm. Father was in World War I. And my sisters, believe this or not, everybody they married were veterans.
Really?
They were all in the service, but like my one brother-in-law, he was in the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
My other brother-in-law was in the Army. I mean, they were. My other brother-in-law was in the Army. I mean, our family was like, I don't know, we just. Like, we were military. We're not
right.
generals and colonels and stuff. We were all enlisted. A lot of us were officers, but we all took this for granted that you had to go in the service.
Right.
There was never a thought of saying, well, I'm going to take off for Canada, which is about 15 miles away from my house. You know, a lot of people did that
mm-hmm.
to get away from the draft.
Sure.
I mean, you got drafted. So I was going to college at the time when I got drafted.
So
and,
there was a very large military tradition in your family.
Yes.
Huge. I mean, how much did that, were you thinking, okay, I want to do this as well, or were you thinking,
my original intent was going to college, and by the way, I was a history major.
Oh, okay.
And becoming a teacher.
Okay.
You know, a high school teacher.
Right.
And I was going, I went to a Jesuit college in Buffalo called Canisius.
Right.
And I was full time for 3 years,
mm-hmm.
and then I switched the nights because it was getting expensive. My dad was paying my tuition, which at that time was $850 a year.
Wow.
So my dad would come up with the tuition. We didn't have student aid and that stuff in those days.
Right.
Unless you got a scholarship, you were on your own.
Mm-hmm.
So I got the. I switched the night. I was going Tuesdays and Thursday nights and
mm-hmm.
Saturday mornings. I worked in a grocery store, a full-time job,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's the way I was doing. And all of a sudden, it was like an unwritten law at the time where if you were 23 years old and you were not married, you got drafted if you were physically able.
Mm-hmm.
That was the criteria back in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So I got my draft notice in November of 61.
Okay.
All right. So then I was 2 Fs up to that time, which would have been student.
Right.
See, I got a deferment.
Tony, do you mind before we go there? Can I ask you a couple other questions about your childhood
sure.
before we go there?
Sure.
A couple about your brothers in World War II. Did they talk about their experiences? Did you ask them about what they had done?
Yes. We had a lot of talk, you know, and the funny part of it is our neighborhood was large families,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of the boys were all in the service.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can remember my neighbors, they were either drafted or enlisted World War II, they started at the VFW in the community here. My dad belonged to a club called the Last Man's Club
mm-hmm.
in the Legion. And every year he would go to a dinner, and they had a bottle of wine from World War I, and,
mm-hmm.
and the last person would drink the wine.
Mm.
And my dad was 6 from the end when he died. He was 81.
Wow.
So, and I remember him putting that Legion cap on and going, and you know,
mm-hmm.
that today I belong to the Legion because my brothers did, and my dad, and you know, mm-hmm. everybody did.
Right, right. Well, your brothers were in the Army?
My brother Jim was in the Army Air Corps.
Okay.
He was the Army Air Corps, which was the predecessor of the Air Force.
Yes.
He was a tech sergeant.
Okay.
And my brother Sam was with General Patton.
Really?
Yeah. They were both in Europe, and they both saw action. I mean, they were right in the middle of it.
Right. are they still alive today?
My brother Jim passed away at 75.
Okay.
And my brother Sam is still alive. He's 80. And he's in pretty tough shape. He's got a lot of, well, one of the biggest things is he won't quit smoking. And he's just wasting away. It's nothing. He's got a tumor in his lung, but he refuses to quit smoking. You know.
Do you all ever talk about the war experiences now?
Yes. We kid around a lot. I mean, my brother will talk about Vietnam and say, "Well, that's not a war. That was a skirmish."
Right, and you're like,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, we have a lot of interplay between us about the service, but the service was a big military was a big part of our life.
Yes. And I know it was for Italian Americans. And showing, like your father did, the citizenship thing, showing that I'm a citizen as well, and I'm going to fight for my country, and so forth, and that obviously in your generations and your family that carried forth. Was your mother supportive of the military service in the family?
Oh yeah, I can remember my mother was. I can remember her getting letters and crying. It was really traumatic for her to have the two sons at the same, they were both in the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was traumatic for her.
What do you remember about World War II, besides your brothers being there? What are your memories?
Well, World War II, I could still vividly remember VJ Day and VE Day when all they did was celebrate and people at our house and the guy playing the accordion and drinking wine all the neighbors over there and they were all happy the boys came home.
Right.
And when the boys came home, which is opposite of when I came home, they had their uniforms on. You know, they wore the uniforms for like 3 or 4 days after they came home, and it was such, I can remember the celebration. I mean, the people were so happy to see the war over and the boys home, and mine was just the opposite. I came home all alone.
Right. What was your opinion of Truman and Eisenhower as a young man? You're kind of coming up through middle school and then into junior high, I guess, about that time.
Well,
do you remember these presidents?
Yes, I do. Harry Truman was an idol in our house.
Okay.
He's another one.
Mm-hmm.
The way he acted, the way he tough he was, and the things that he accomplished when he was in there. Plus, the biggest thing is the part, and a lot of people don't know this, but the service at that time was segregated.
Mm-hmm.
He
yes.
actually desegregated the service. And, you know, in World War II, there was a lot of segregation.
Yes.
Well, when I went to Vietnam, there wasn't.
Right.
And we had black guys in our outfit, everybody got along really good. I mean, it was unbelievable how we got along because we were, like, united.
Right.
And there was no discrimination.
Right. And Truman broke that barrier.
Right. He was the one. And later on, my biggest idol, believe it or not, was John Kennedy.
Uh-huh.
I mean, when I was a kid, I just idolized this guy. And
you were in high school when Kennedy was? Or no,
yeah, I actually worked on his campaign when I was about 18 or 17 years old. I went around putting up signs. I was so, And then when I got my draft notice, guess whose name was on there? John Kennedy.
Your friend John Kennedy. Right?
And then when I'm over in Vietnam, guess who got killed?
Yeah, your friend John Kennedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about General Eisenhower? What was your opinion of him as president?
Eisenhower, as I grew up, he was a great general.
Mm-hmm.
But then as I read books about him later on and stuff, I found out that he was mainly a staff man.
Mm-hmm.
He was never a frontliner. He wasn't a general like Omar Bradley. And, Omar Bradley was loved by the troops.
Yes.
And he was the general's general, they used to call him.
Mm-hmm.
And the other generals that, Patton, I mean, those guys were on the line. My brother actually saw Patton, and he was there. He was
mm-hmm.
on the job,
mm-hmm.
He was, Eisenhower was always a staff man.
Yeah.
He was always, he was a planner and stuff. He wasn't really a frontline type of general, which I always like that type of general.
Right.
I want to see that guy with it right in the front line.
Right. What do you remember about the Cold War and what you were hearing and learning as a young man?
The Cold War, I remember we were in high school when the blockade in Cuba.
Right.
And that was a big thing, and that was big. And Korea,
mm-hmm.
you know, the Korean, because there was quite a few guys around here that were drafted and went to Korea.
Mm-hmm.
So, the Cold War was the communism part, and that, you know, mm-hmm. that was that came after the Korean part of it, and
mm-hmm.
and then all of a sudden people were, you know, against communism. That
right.
was our big enemy at the time.
Right. Do you remember your teachers in high school?
Yes.
Talking about communism.
Yes.
About the Soviet Union.
Yes. Yes. They talked about communism. Yeah.
Do you remember what they? Would you all practice the duck and cover in case
yes.
of nuclear attack?
Yes. We went through all that phase two of the air raid. I could still remember as a child the air raids that used to happen during the war.
Really?
When the lights were all out, yeah.
Wow. During the Second World War.
Right,
about.
Second World War,
right.
They'd have a drill, and they had like the Civil Air Patrol. These people used to go up in these towers and
mm-hmm.
look for planes, and
mm-hmm.
they did that after two. The Civilian Defense,
mm-hmm.
which was big. Every township had a civil defense director,
mm-hmm.
and there was volunteers that used to help this guy in, you know, planning in case we ever got attacked. So, you know, then the bomb shelters later on, too.
Mm-hmm.
So the country at that time, they were fearful of what could happen, you know.
Right, right. Tell me about the emphasis on education in your household. Was that something that you all, you know, your parents wanted you all to be in school, stay in school?
Yes, okay. Yes. My older brothers and sisters never got the opportunity to finish school, the older ones.
You're talking about college or high school?
High school.
Okay.
And I think three of my sisters graduated from high school.
Okay.
None of my brothers.
Mm-hmm.
They went out and worked. And then, you know, they went into service when they were 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They were young fellas, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My one brother, when he came home under the GI Bill, he went to carpenter school.
Mm-hmm.
And he got to be a carpenter. And his life went on. He became a pretty good cabinet maker and stuff. He was
mm-hmm.
pretty good. And the other brother was a tile setter.
Mm-hmm.
He used to put tiles in your bathroom and stuff like that. He
right.
did it self-employed.
Right. Okay. And you said you were the first to go to college.
Right.
Yeah. Well, before we go to Kinesis, tell me about what was high school like for you? Tell me about how you were as a student. Were you into athletics? And what kind of friends did you run around with?
I was sort of a short. I was like, I would say about 5'2", 5'3", in high school. And I did go off with football. I was third string quarterback.
Okay.
I ran track, ran a mile.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved basketball, but I was too short. But I played in the Merle and stuff like that. You know,
right.
I was never. But I loved sports.
Mm-hmm.
I used to write the sports page for our local school paper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I used to go to all the games. I never missed basketball or football games.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote for the school paper.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And to this day, I still love sports.
Yeah. What kind of student were you?
The courses that I loved, my history and the social studies, and the courses like that, I got straight A's. But, you know, I had trouble with the physics and math and algebra, you know, the same
mm-hmm.
everybody else did. And, you know, my marks were, I was about maybe a B student.
Mm-hmm.
I had fairly good marks. And I was active in, you know, like the, like I said, the school paper, and had to lead in the senior play. You know, I was involved in a lot of things.
Right. Why were you so good in social studies?
I just had a love for history.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the dates and events used to come to me. You know, the kids in my class, how the hell do you remember all that stuff? and I used to read a lot.
Uh huh.
I'd be in a library looking, you know, but most of my stuff, the books I read were historical novels.
Mm-hmm.
Novels and events and things that happened.
Why were you into those?
I don't know. I just liked history.
Mm-hmm.
I just enjoyed history.
Okay. What were your friends like? Who did you run around with?
My friends were about on the same level as I. There was nobody that was, like, you know, really rich and had cars in high school. Most of us, one or two guys had cars, and we'd all jump in a... excuse me. Mm-hmm. So we'd jump in a car, and we'd go to different events, you know, mm-hmm. as a group. Mm-hmm. And most of the ones I hung around with were mainly in the same position I was in, you know, like a family that... mother and dad, you know, in those days, people didn't get divorced or anything, so everybody had a mother and father that were around the house and stuff. So we didn't have a lot of problems with what happens today when these couples break up and these kids are, you know, shunted from parent to parent or mm-hmm. getting in trouble. And I think that's one of the reasons. Plus, we were very close to our church. Mm-hmm. I mean, we belonged to, I was an altar boy for 5 years, and then...
I assume Catholic.
Pardon?
Catholic?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and our parents were strict Catholics, and, you know, we had to go to catechism, and we had to, you know, go to Mass on Sunday, and mm-hmm. so, and that showed when I went to Vietnam, because every Sunday I'd go to Mass.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
There was a Vietnamese church in the village, and I'd go there because mm-hmm. there was a lot of Catholics in Vietnam. So, mm-hmm.
okay, what kind of jobs did you have in high school, Tony? You said you worked on Kennedy's campaign, but what other type of jobs did you do?
I worked mainly in grocery stores. I worked for A&P, which was a big chain back in those days. Mm-hmm. They were all over the country, mm-hmm. and it was a union. You know, they had a union, and I was making like $2 an hour. Boy, that was big bucks. Mm-hmm. Believe me, I thought that was really something in a job at the A&P. Mm-hmm. And I'd work after school, and I worked summers, and, you know, I had to work because, you know, we didn't have much money. So mm-hmm. whatever I had, if I wanted to go out or anything, I had to make my own money.
Right.
So that's how I grew up.
Okay.
And my whole family was like that, too. I mean, we all worked. There was nobody that sat around the house, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. What years were you in high school? 60, 64?
52 to 56. I graduated in 56.
52.
Lake Shore.
Okay, 52 to 56.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then I waited a year. Then again, I didn't have any money. Mm-hmm. And then I started college in, actually, 57.
Okay.
September of 57, I started at Canisius.
Tell me about the decision to go to Canisius, to go to college, actually, in general. You said you were the first one. Was that your own, you know, internal fire driving you that way, or was everybody encouraging you to go for it?
Well, I had teachers in high school that thought I should go to college.
Uh-huh.
And I can remember this English teacher, Mr. Byrne, he sat me down one day and he said, you know, you should go to college, and I want you to write a letter and apply to Canisius or wherever you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And Canisius was probably the closest because there was St. Bonaventure was quite a ways away,
mm-hmm.
and at Niagara, the other Catholic school,
mm-hmm.
Was kind of far away. So Canisius was the shortest place that I could go to,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't have a car in those days, so I would take a bus.
Okay.
A Greyhound bus in the Buffalo, and that's how I started school. And when I was at Canisius, I had 2 years of ROTC.
Now, was that voluntarily? You wanted to do that?
Well, at Canisius College, they didn't have a phys ed program.
Okay.
So the only other thing you could take would be ROTC, and you had to take a physical to get into it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you had to take 2 years of it. You got credit for it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you wanted to stay in and go on to be an officer, you had to go 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had to go to summer camp after between your junior and senior year.
Okay. And you opted for which route?
I just took the two.
Okay. Okay.
So that's what happened there.
Okay.
That was my first exposure to actually military. I mean, we had uniforms and we had drills and, you know.
Yeah.
We took courses and we studied military history. Mm-hmm. We took, you know, the great battles and the great wars and stuff
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy it?
Pardon?
Did you enjoy it?
Very much so.
So that was not a foreign culture for you, I
No.
guess.
In fact, when I went to basic training, the sergeant says, anybody, any of you have ROTC? And I raised my hand and made me a squad leader. So.
Oh, wow. Right off the bat. Okay. Do you remember what kind of music you were listening to and kind of your social life? What was that like for you then?
Well, rock and roll was just starting.
Yes.
You know, and Elvis Presley and... you know, and all the teen, Frankie Avalon, and, you know. And then in those days, Paul Anka and Frankie Avalon and Jerry Lee Lewis, they used to go on tour. And we had a roller rink in Angola, and those guys all came here. It cost us a buck to get in, and that's the guys that we saw in person.
Wow.
The television was just starting, too. And all those big stars would come to these little towns, and you know, they'd fill up the whole roller rink with 400 or 500 screaming kids.
Who did you see?
Frank Avalon.
Wow.
Paul Anka. Jerry Lee Lewis broke the piano. Yeah, he was pounding on the piano so much he broke it. And there was quite a few that you know just came through. I saw Connie Francis. Bobby Darin, who they just made a movie about.
Right.
Kevin Spacey just made a movie about him, but he was a big star in those days. I mean, now they're discovering this guy. Well, my God, he was a big star in those days.
Well, that's interesting. Tell me about college life for you outside of ROTC. What was it like academically?
College was very, very, the Jesuit schools were very, very strict.
Right.
Very strict. I mean, you couldn't miss class. I mean, I marvel at when my kids went to St. Bonaventure, and two of them went to state schools, upstate and in Cobleskill, and they used to skip classes, and I used to say, we could never skip classes. So you had to be sick.
They actually admitted to you that they skipped classes.
Yeah, they would tell me.
Uh-huh.
And then the other thing is we had to wear suits. You had to wear a suit every day, tie. You know, and there was no liquor on the campus, no beer and stuff like that. I mean, you had to go to a campus bar, you know, to get a beer. I go down there. I went to Bonnie to visit my kids a couple of years ago, and we're down in this bar and on the campus drinking beer, and you know, I mean, oh my God, what a change!
You think it's a change for the better or for the worse?
Oh, I think the strictness was better.
Yeah.
I mean, and the courses we took and the courses they take today, I mean, what a difference. I mean, oh, my God. We had to take 4 years of philosophy.
Wow.
4 years of theology. You had to take them. And then we had the history courses. Oh, my God. Diplomatic history, constitutional law history. We took so many courses. And these kids today, they... just amazing. It was tough. And we had, the Jesuits are noted as the best teachers in the world. Teams have sent their children to Jesuit schools. And they're all over the world, in France and Germany and, Italy. I mean, the Jesuits are known all over the world as the best teachers. And to me, these guys are so brilliant. And they would, you know, they talk about history and they'd go on the blackboard and write in Hebrew and write in Greek. And you know, I was just awed by these guys.
Yeah. What kind of student were you?
Well, college was tough. College was tough for me because I was a country boy and most of the kids there were city boys. And they went to the Catholic high school. But I never went to Catholic high school, so... a lot of it was just going on to the next level, which was Canisius College. A lot of them went to Canisius High School, still run by the Jesuits, see? And I wasn't exposed to that being from a public school, so it was tough. It was tough. I was about a C student, that's about all, except for the history. I did very well in history.
Okay. So... ROTC there, you thought that was okay? You understood it? You felt comfortable with that kind of lifestyle?
Yes.
Okay. Did you see yourself going forward into the military at this point, or were you thinking, I need to graduate?
No, I wanted to go be a teacher.
Right, right.
But I foresaw that I was going to go into service.
No, why?
Because, the guys I grew up with, if they were like a year older than I, they got drafted. Boom, they were in the service.
Right.
So... I expected myself to go in eventually. I mean, It was amazing. I mean, I see the difference between my kids and what I went through.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I knew I had to go into service, whether I got a school or whether I dropped out of school, whatever, I had to go into service.
Right.
As long as I passed the physical.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all you had to do. And today, they don't even think about it.
What kind of difference do you think that makes between what you?
Well, it gets me mad because, like my kids, my father-in-law
mm-hmm.
Was in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
He's a sergeant. He was overseas, saw combat. So on both sides of our family, my two oldest brother-in-laws were both in the service.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, service was like part of your life.
Right.
You had to go into service. And my kids think nothing of it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that it what did it do for you?
Well, I'll tell you, it gave me great discipline.
Uh-huh.
Great discipline. Even today, I still get up at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Uh-huh.
Every day, 7 days a week, I get up at the discipline.
Wow.
The things that you have to do,
mm-hmm.
you got to do this, and that discipline carries on to my life.
Mm-hmm.
I pay my bills on time, never late with my bills.
Mm-hmm.
I do everything according, I pay my taxes. I do everything according to this discipline that I got from the military.
Mm-hmm. And that stayed with you all your life.
Right. Still to this day.
Okay. Tell me what happened with Canisius and then getting out early and not finishing.
Well, I tried. I was when I was at Fort Benning.
Uh-huh.
We had the opportunity to take the University of Maryland extension courses for about like $13 a credit hour.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that was very cheap.
Right.
So I signed up for this course, and every Saturday when I was at Fort Benning, I'd get my books and I'd take off for school.
Mm-hmm.
And in the school were mainly officers' wives. So here I was, a PFC, and there were all these officers' wives in there. A lot of people didn't take advantage of these extension courses. They had most of your posts had those extension courses.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they even had them in Saigon.
That's right.
But I wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't take them, but it was cheap, and it was subsidized, and it was a way to, get some credit.
Now, this is after you're out of Canisius. You didn't graduate, right?
No.
Okay, you finished there, what, in 60 is when you left?
61? No, I got drafted in 61.
Mm-hmm.
I appealed it. I went to the draft board,
mm-hmm.
and they let me stay until January.
Okay.
To finish, because I was already signed up for the three courses, and I paid my tuition. I would have lost the money in the courses.
Mm-hmm.
So I took the three courses, and then I passed the three of them,
mm-hmm.
and then right away. Hello?
And you were in? I mean,
yes.
Immediately you went in. Okay.
Yes.
And this is in 1962.
Two, right.
Just 62. Okay. And were you happy with the Army? Did you want to go to the Marine Corps, possibly? Or?
No.
Okay.
No, the Army tradition was, that was our family was Army.
That's okay. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
So there was really no question.
When my nephew signed up for the Marine Corps, we thought he was nuts.
Okay. Well, tell me about your initial experiences there with the Army. Tell me about, you went to Fort Jackson, is that correct?
Fort Jackson for 3 days, and then it was too crowded, so they shipped us down to Fort Gordon.
Okay, and that's where you did your basic at Fort Gordon?
Which actually could have been called Little Vietnam, because it was almost exactly the same as Vietnam, the sand and, the heat.
Uh-huh.
Well, so we went through that.
Well, what was basic like for you? Tell me what you did.
Basic was tough. It was tough. You got up early in the morning, you did your PT. Now, like I told you before, I was a biler in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to run, and I had no trouble with that,
mm-hmm.
with that exercise and the running, because I wasn't in high school that long ago,
mm-hmm.
and I did well in the physical aspects of it, and I wasn't a big kid, I wasn't big. I mean, I had trouble with the hand-to-hand combat, trying to throw a guy who was 180, and I was about 140,
right?
Kind of tough, skinny. I was always skinny. And my kids don't believe it. I put a little weight on since then.
Mm-hmm.
But I adjusted to it. you know, I had no trouble. I know there was quite a few guys that didn't adjust to it, and they got rifted out. They got, you know, they went back home again, or they just didn't make it.
Mm-hmm.
Some would try anything to get out. I mean, I didn't think it was that difficult.
Mm-hmm. What was the most difficult thing for you?
Well, no sleep. In basic training, boy, you're pulling KP, you're pulling guard duty,
uh-huh.
You know, and when you hit that bunk, boy, you were out.
Right.
But it was the toughest part of the service with that basic training because you had all the discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Once you got into like with Fort Benning or Fort Eustis, it was like an 8-hour job. You know, you went to classes and then you went home and
mm-hmm.
you watched TV or go down to the club, shoot pool, you know, things
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm. What do you remember about basic? What's the most memorable thing? What comes to your mind? What do you see when you think about that experience?
Well, the biggest thing is you had to make yourself scarce, because if you were laying around the barracks and sergeant come in and say, okay, I want you to go do this and do that.
So right.
As soon as you were off duty, you know, boom, you took off for the club or you went someplace to get away.
Mm-hmm.
But you couldn't get off post or anything, so you had to stay there. Nobody had cars.
Mm-hmm.
So we go to movies and stuff like that. You know, we just kept away from the sergeants.
What did you think about Georgia?
Well, it was a new experience for me, being
yeah.
from the north,
yes.
and then all of a sudden you're in this heat.
Right.
And, of course, that was good training for Vietnam because
mm-hmm.
it was hot over there. But the thing that I feared the most, believe this or not, was the snakes.
Really?
I hated snakes.
Were you warned about them down there? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. They told the different kinds of copperheads and the coral snakes.
Uh-huh.
And the sergeant killed a coral snake. I don't know if you ever saw a coral snake.
Yes, absolutely.
It's kind of small.
Yeah.
And they could kill you.
Yes, they're the most poisonous snakes in the South.
And one day we were on a detail in all these pine trees. That's all there was down there, was pine trees.
Mm-hmm.
And me and this other fellow had to go and dig these holes. They used to give you these little jabs to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we're out there digging these holes, and I see two snakes coming, rattlers.
Uh-huh.
You know, they were big.
They're coming at you.
Yeah, they're coming right at us. I mean, they weren't coiled up there. They were.
Yeah.
So me and this kid, we took off.
Mm-hmm.
He was afraid of snakes, too.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing, this carries on to when we went to Vietnam, the first thing they told us about the different snakes over there, and
mm-hmm.
they were mostly poisonous, too. So
mm-hmm.
that's one thing I always feared. I always look at my boots at night to make sure there was no snakes crawled.
Yeah.
Up in the morning when we got up and stuff
yeah.
like that.
Right.
Or we jumped in a foxhole when we had an alert.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because a lot of times there was snakes in those foxholes and they'd bite you. You know, you jump in there at night.
Sure.
So you got to be careful.
Yeah. Do you remember any of the racial strife in the South there in Georgia? Did you see anything like that going on?
No, but when I was in Virginia,
mm-hmm.
at Fort Eustis, and, mm-hmm. and like I said, I was never – well, there was two incidents that I can remember. Basic training.
Mm-hmm.
There was a kid from Lackawanna, Nick Johnson, black kid.
Lackawanna where?
New York.
Okay.
That's real close to us.
Okay.
And he got drafted, and what a nice kid, real nice kid.
Yeah.
And Nick, we were coming home, and we stopped. It was either Virginia or West Virginia, I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But we stopped to eat. And the waitress, the white waitress, came over and she says, "I'll serve you, but I won't serve him."
Mm-hmm.
So we got up and walked out. Well, we didn't know that. See, I mean, up here,
yeah.
we never faced that.
Right.
So all of us stood up and we walked out with him. This okay. was on our way home from basic training.
Okay.
So we saw that, and then one night we were coming back, me and this kid from Batavia, which isn't too far from Angola,
mm-hmm.
He used to drive home on weekends, because it wasn't that far from Virginia
mm-hmm.
to Buffalo. So we stopped in a bar, I'm going down there, mm-hmm. and it was a black bar, and
mm-hmm.
we didn't realize that, because we just never exposed to that.
Mm-hmm.
So we walked in there, and all these black people just kept staring at us, like, "What are you doing in here?"
It was you and who else?
Me and another kid from Batavia.
Okay, and you both, I mean, he was white?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So, I mean, it was new to us. All these things were new, because over here, we grew up with black kids and a lot of Indian kids, too, because
mm-hmm.
We lived close to the reservation up here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we just never thought that they were any different than anybody else.
Right.
the person that taught my father bricklaying at Bethlehem Steel was a black man.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to come over to our house. My father invited him over for spaghetti. He loved spaghetti.
Yeah.
And he'd walk in our house, and the neighbors would go nuts.
Really?
Because, yeah.
Wow.
But we went all through high school with black kids, and we never had any trouble.
Uh-huh.
Never, no, there was no such thing. Now, in the city, it was a little different. I think the city had more problems than we had out in the suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't that many black, you know, kids, but mm-hmm. in the service, there was a lot of black kids.
Okay.
Sergeants, but, I mean, our sergeants were black, you know.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But that was my first experience of segregation, believe it or not, in my life.
So it struck you as very strange.
Yeah. It was strange because, you know, black buyer, what do you mean?
Right.
You go in a bar over here, there was black people in there.
Right. Right. Tony, let me go on a tangent here just for a second, if you'll indulge me. Tell me about your mother's cooking and that good Italian food.
Oh, my God. My mother, my wife is Irish.
Okay.
My wife is Irish.
Well, be careful then.
But my mother, we still talk, we get together, all us guys, about the dishes that our mothers made.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't forget I told you I was skinny, right?
Yes, yes.
Well, what do we eat? We eat pasta. We had chicken.
Uh-huh.
We never had steak.
Uh-huh.
We never had hamburgers. I mean, that was a delicacy. A hamburger was a delicacy. And that's what we ate. A lot of seafood.
Mm-hmm.
Every Friday we had fish.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother could make pasta with anything, with cauliflower, with asparagus, a hundred different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And that's she canned her own foods. She made her own ketchup. She made her own peaches.
Wow.
And we had a little dugout underneath our cellar.
Uh-huh.
Not our cellar, our porch.
Uh-huh.
And my father just dug it out by hand. And in there, you have these two barrels of wine,
uh-huh.
and we'd have apples and stuff that we had in the fall, and we'd have them all during the winter.
Wow.
You know, we had an ice box, but we didn't have the refrigerator in those days.
Right.
You had an ice man.
Right.
And then in our neighborhood, which was mainly Sicilian, like I said,
uh-huh.
we had these, we call them hucksters.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys would come in their little vehicles, and they'd have... all kinds of Italian delicacies and cheese and
mm-hmm.
olives, you know, that's
mm-hmm.
the way we bought our stuff.
Now, as a Sicilian, what do you think about the Godfather movies?
Well...
Because this family, the Corleone family, is Italian.
Yes.
Your thoughts on that?
Yes. My mother and father would talk to us about they call it the Black Hand. They never called it the Mafia or the Mob.
Uh-huh.
They'd say it was the Black Hand.
Right.
And believe it or not, the Black Hand didn't have a very good reputation with the Sicilians because they would put pressure on them to give them money.
Right.
They were extortionists.
Right.
And when you mention the Black Hand, you know, they feared the Black Hand, but they... But the same token, they hated them.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no love, you know, for mm-hmm. the Dons and that stuff that you see in the movies today.
Right, right.
I mean, they glorify him, but not in Sicily.
So that was that part of your upbringing and kind of discussions about this part of Italian or Sicilian?
No, we never, I mean, we never, I mean, the city had mob figures. I mean, you read
right.
about it in the paper, certainly. People that were the mob, but where we lived, there wasn't too many mobsters.
Right. Angola was separated.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, look, back to basic. Tell me, all right, so you finish up basic, and you're going to go off to Virginia, to Fort Eustis, is that correct?
Right.